Well, hello there, everyone. I'm Dr. Leslie Kernison, board-certified geriatrician and the founder of the website betterhealthwhileaging.net. And this is the Better Health While Aging video podcast, where we discuss common health problems that affect people over age 60 and the best ways to prevent and manage those problems. We also often address common concerns and dilemmas that come up with aging parents and other older loved ones, like what to do if you're worried about falls or safety or memory or even the quality of an older person's healthcare. So this episode is the second one in a two-part series on urinary tract infections and aging, both of which are featuring a very special guest, Dr. Chrissy Kistler, who is a board-certified geriatrician who has conducted research on UTIs and UTI treatment, especially in nursing homes. She's currently an associate professor of medicine at the University of Pittsburgh. Now, in part one, and if you haven't seen that episode, I highly recommend it. Dr. Chrissy took us through the basics of UTIs in older adults. In this second part, we're going to talk about UTIs in two particular subsets of older adults. One is those who are experiencing memory or thinking problems, such as those who have Alzheimer's or another form of dementia. And then we're also going to talk about those older adults who are frail enough to be living in nursing homes. These are two subsets of older adults in which it can be especially challenging to deal with UTIs. So I'm super grateful to have Dr. Chrissy Kistler here to explain UTIs in these more vulnerable groups of older adults. Dr. Chrissy, thank you for coming back for this section.
Thank you, Dr. Leslie, for having me. I really am excited to be here today.
Okay. So let's start off by talking about people who are having ongoing memory or thinking problems. They often have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease or another type of dementia, such as vascular or Lewy body, or you and I know that especially if they're in their 80s or older, they probably have mixed dementia. Sometimes their diagnosis might even be mild cognitive impairment, not yet dementia. And if any of you watching have questions about that, I have a video explaining the difference between mild cognitive impairment and dementia. But this is a group that by nature might be having some trouble with memory or thinking and is prone to confusion. And so often when older people are confused, there's this question of whether they might have a urinary tract infection. So can you talk a little bit about how do you think about UTIs differently, maybe in older adults who have a known memory or thinking problem like this?
Yeah, this is a very difficult population to manage. I think the big overriding problem is that dementia, one of the hallmarks of dementia is that waxing and waning clarity. So that people may have times in which they are very able to understand where they are, what they're doing, who they're with, what's going on. And then they have other times in which they are not. And so it becomes, I think, very natural to try and figure out, well, why are there sometimes when they're more clear and there's sometimes when they're less clear? We know it is, and we do not understand dementia. There's a lot of taxpayer money being devoted to try and figure out why dementia happens. Regardless of why it happens, we know it is characterized by this waxing and waning cycles and that people will sundown, right? So that it's usually in the evening, the witching hour, that things start to get really...
When they're tired.
When they've been through a long day, you know, they're stressed, that's the hardest time for them. And so that, and distinguishing that from some of what would be considered an acute delirium, that is confusion, that is more sudden in onset, that might be a hallmark of something, a more serious infection, that can be hard to tease out. So to tease out dementia and delirium can be very difficult. The thing about a urinary tract infection is that older adults, as they age, become less able to report their symptoms, right? If you listen to the first part, you heard us say that does it burn when you pee? It may be hard for a person with more severe dementia to report that. They may not be aware of that.
Or even mild dementia. They may have very poor short-term memory, right? And not remember, because this is less about them getting older and more about as their cognitive symptoms are progressing, right?
Right. And so if we're using our symptoms
to diagnose a UTI, that can be really challenging. And so that's where, you know, I think if they need help in getting to the bathroom or having them, you know, observed while they're going to the bathroom and they're wincing, you know, when they're urinating or like, oh, that hurts. Or like you notice that she's getting up every 15 minutes to go to the bathroom. That those may be things where the caregiver becomes really sort of a detective in trying to watch for an increase of those signs and symptoms. We also know that incontinence can become more pervasive as dementia develops, and therefore, you know, you can't find new or worsening incontinence because it's pretty much as bad as it's going to get. And so that's another sign that, you know, can be really hard to tease out in this population. I think that pain when you press sort of above their bladder, that is something you can look for. And then obviously, if they're wincing or having discomfort when they're urinating, that's something as well. Again, you need to look down there and make sure there's nothing more serious like a contact dermatitis because they may not be wiping as well. Mm-hmm. Also, now they also, maybe because they're not wiping as well, also may have more bacteria having a chance to get up into their bladder.
Yeah.
And they might not be remembering to go as often as you or I might remember to go. So it is a really challenging topic to try and sort out, is this a real infection or not an infection? So I just want to say that.
Yeah. So I guess to kind of clarify, you know, what I'm hearing you say is, and, you know, we won't go through everything that we did in part one, but really briefly, you know, in part one, we had talked about how a urinary tract infection, you know, means that a person's urinary tract, especially their bladder, possibly higher up from their bladder, has more bacteria than usual, and that they are having symptoms that are localizing to the urinary tract. Symptoms like burning or pain when they pee, having to go to the toilet more often, having to urinate more often, having it feel more urgent, having more incontinence than usual. Having pain in the lower belly or possibly in the back where the kidneys are. And that just weakness and confusion in and of itself is not a localized symptom. And so what I'm trying to say,
neither is stinky urine or cloudy urine. All of that is also.
Neither is stinky urine or cloudy urine. And what I'm hearing you say is just because a person has the diagnosis of Alzheimer's or dementia, it should still be the same criteria. But the challenge is more that when people have developed memory problems and have difficulty remembering what their symptoms are or reporting their symptoms, it can be much harder to distinguish whether they actually are having symptoms there because they might not be able to tell us, oh, wow, now I have to pee really badly, really suddenly all the time. Because they're not remembering that, somebody would have to observe them and notice that they're having more incontinence than usual, or that they're getting up to scramble off to the bathroom more often than usual, or maybe that they're wincing when they're peeing if somebody is watching them. And that's really more the challenge, is like identifying the symptom, not that we look for different symptoms to diagnose a UTI.
Correct. That's exactly right.
Okay. So and that, again, I work in the nursing home a lot. You know, it's nice because many of my older adults are more frail. They need physical assistance to get to the toilet, and therefore they can get observed a little more. So sometimes they'll come to me and they'll say, she looks like she's in pain when she's peeing. And I'm like, okay, let's go see what's going on here.
Right. But for that person who maybe is still living at home, sometimes living alone, it can be very challenging for us to get the information we need to determine whether they're actually having the symptoms of a UTI or not. And then it sounds like in terms of whether they're at higher risk, they might be, because they might be doing worse with their hygiene, right?
They might not have good PO intake. They're not really emptying their bladder on a regular basis. And again, we know as dementia develops, just like you eventually, you know, you start to fall because you can't move your body well, you do start to lose control of your bladder. So it's not emptying in the same way as well also.
Right, right. And then we also touched on the sort of increased confusion and the question of delirium. So delirium, I'm planning to make a video on this. I definitely have an article about it on Better Health While Aging. Delirium is this condition of worse than usual mental function That can happen to people of any age, actually, but it especially is more likely to happen in older adults, especially more likely to happen to older adults who already have Alzheimer's or another form of dementia. But it's when people get worse than usual mental function in the setting of some kind of bodily stressor, often an illness, and can be caused by a urinary tract infection or by any number of things that make people sick, or even by medication changes. And so it's true that in geriatrics, when an older person becomes more confused than usual, especially if they already have Alzheimer's or dementia, we do start thinking, could they be sick? Could they have an infection, right?
Absolutely. I like to think of delirium, this acute change that happens in the brain, as kind of like the, you know, the alarms blaring, the smoke detector going off. We need to figure out where's the fire. The fire may not be in the bladder, but we need to look in the bladder. We need to look in the lungs. We need to make sure it's not their oxygen levels or their electrolytes. Acute delirium is kind of like having a heart attack for your heart, but for your brain. It carries that kind of mortality risk. And so trying to understand it and fix it is really paramount. So doing due diligence and looking broadly to make sure you can try and figure out what is the thing that has caused the delirium. Now, sometimes it's not avoidable, right? We know that hip surgery, for example, can cause delirium. You get the anesthetics, you have pain, all the things. And yet you may need that to be able to walk again. And so there are risks that we take, but that if we see delirium, we do need to do a 360 workup and make sure we're not just, again, pigeonholing the bladder as the culprit when it may well be something else.
Right. So if a person who has Alzheimer's, you know, if when families tell us they're more confused, you and I are generally asking questions. Are we talking about a little more confused, like within the scope of what we'd expect? People tend to get worse at certain times of day, or if they've had a bunch of stressful new encounters, their routine has been changed, they didn't sleep well, you know, or is it really more substantial? And if it is more substantial, and it sounds like it might be delirium, we are not going to be thinking only UTIs. We want to think more broadly what could be going on with the person, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I just want to touch on something that we talked about in greater depth in part one, which is what happens if you just culture an older person's urine, especially if they are old enough to have Alzheimer's or dementia. And what we were talking about is that often it's positive because many older adults have a colonized bladder, asymptomatic bacteriuria, right? So are people with dementia more likely to be colonized in your experience?
Yeah, they are. Absolutely. I think for the same reasons, you know, when you're cognitively aware, you're going to maintain your hydration better. You're going to toilet on a more regular basis. You're going to be able to generally clean yourself in a better manner. You may be less immunocompromised, you know, when you don't have dementia than when you do. And so I think that all of those reasons suggest that people with dementia have higher rates of colonization, and they do get infections. And I also think that's an important thing to contextualize this conversation, is that as the brain starts to fall apart, and dementia is a terminal neurodegenerative condition, which we cannot as of yet cure, that it's going to lose the ability to process and protect itself from outside infections, and that pneumonia, skin infections, bladder infections are really the hallmark of that final stage. And so when I start to see people with dementia who are developing real and recurrent infections, I do think that maybe we need to have a conversation, because even though antibiotics can prolong life, at some point antibiotics will fail and they will not prolong life anymore. Yeah. So making sure that the antibiotics are in line with their goals of care becomes incredibly important.
Right, right. No, that's a great point. I will say that stage of dementia where we start to see recurring infections, you know, when it's been studied, people are often in their last year and a half or so of life. But also at that point, people have generally reached the stage where their dementia has progressed to the point where they're not speaking, they are bedbound, They, you know, are usually being spoon-fed. We wouldn't expect, you know, for somebody who's having recurrent infections but is otherwise walking and talking, albeit very confused much of the time, we wouldn't attribute recurrent infections to late-stage dementia, I would say.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's an important point for families who do have a loved one who maybe has reached that stage of dementia where they're no longer speaking, no longer walking around, and, you know, requiring a lot of hands-on care, right?
Right. And I think that it's important to think about that there might be treatments like antibiotics, which are appropriate at some point in time, that there comes a time where things may be different and that what you did before may not be what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And all of that depends on people's values, people's goals, and it's a conversation people need to have with their family and their doctors, but it is something to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to come back to the person, let's say, who is earlier in their dementia and Alzheimer's, meaning that there's somebody who's still walking and talking, although they may often be very confused, have very poor memory, you know, maybe even having, you know, often delusions or moments of agitation. If one day they are more, you know, agitated than usual or different than usual, how do we know if it's a UTI or not? It sounds like you were saying we got to just try to be really observant about whether we're seeing signs of worse continence, pain when they pee, and we can also examine them, push on their belly, see if that generates pain. Anything else people should sort of keep in mind?
No, and I think then you make sure they're also not in more pain, and we should be treating their pain, or they're not constipated, or they're not retaining, or they're not, something else is going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think we have to do. We can't just stop at a person's bladder and again, aggressively hydrate them, make sure they're sleeping well, doing all the things we know that you need to do for a body to function well.
Mm-hmm. And so as we said, it is common for people to still get their urine tested, a urine culture that comes back positive. In your experience, has treating that with antibiotics tended to improve people's confusion?
Not typically.
Mental state?
Right. So what we can do is let's get our culture. Let's not treat, because we do know dementia can wax and wane. I'll have the antibiotic at the ready. We'll continue to monitor them closely, make sure that their blood pressure is staying good. They're not having a fever. They're not, you know, their pulse rate isn't going high. We're keeping, again, a close eye on them. We're pushing fluids. We're helping them get to the bathroom. We're making sure they're not constipated. And then the urine culture comes back. 3 days have gone by. How are they doing? Are they back to their normal? If they are back to their baseline and living their lives, like you'd said, you know, if a person's had these symptoms for weeks, it's probably not a UTI, right? If the person had these symptoms and 3 days have gone by and now they're back to their good old selves, it's probably not a UTI.
Yeah.
So I think that
you give it a couple days. And so even if the culture comes back positive, if they've gone back to normal, we're actually going to say they're probably colonized. They were just having a bad time for other reasons.
Correct.
Right?
They
kind of returned to their baseline. So you just brought up something that we touched on in part one. So maybe we'll mention it right now, because I do get asked this for when families especially are working on getting an older person diagnosed and the person's been having memory problems, making mistakes in their life for like 3 months. And the families will ask me, well, but couldn't this be an ongoing UTI? The reason why they're having these memory and thinking problems. So can you speak to that?
Right. So if it is a localized bladder infection, right? Either one, just like if you had a cut on your skin and it got pussy and infected, it might go away on its own, but it's not going to take months to do it. If it's going to get to be really serious, it's also not going to take months to do it. I think that's the way things are in the bladder. If it's going to be a serious problem, it's going to happen in a shorter period of time. You have days. It's not like this. You've got a little bit of time, but it's not going to be months of this. And, you know, if a person has been, you know, for whatever reason, maybe they got started on a medication that caused them to develop a little confusion, a little touch of delirium. You know, that may be enough to trigger people. Maybe they fell and now they're having more pain. That may be enough to trigger sort of delirium that leads into dementia. There are all kinds of reasons that suddenly people seem to manifest dementia, which we know has been going on sort of behind the scenes for years, if not decades, and that somehow the family then suddenly is aware. I often, when I push families or you talk to more than just one family member, they'll be like, yeah, she says 3 months, but we've seen it. It's been a while, right? Mm-hmm. Like there have been signs. They've stopped driving, not because of other things, but they couldn't process it. You know, they've stopped managing their checkbooks. Oh, yes, maybe it was her vision. But again, maybe it's because she couldn't process it. Were there bad checks? Were there accidents? And when you kind of dig into it a little more, you realize
there's often a little trail.
Yes. And the bladder is just the culprit, right? The bladder becomes kind of the, again, the donkey that you pin the tail to.
And yeah. Well, I always feel a little bad telling people that I don't think treating whatever's in the bladder is going to make a difference. But I do tell them that generally people aren't there confused from a UTI for months and months. You know,
and
if they're having delirium, as you said, if it's bad enough to cause delirium, it's probably going to turn into something more significant. You know, or it's going to get better over a week or two. But if it's been going on for months and months, I wouldn't attribute it just to a UTI.
Right. And I think, you know, you need to work up for their thyroid and you need to work up their, you know, the other things that might contribute to their cognitive.
Lots of things can cause cognitive impairment. I actually have a video on that, 10 common causes that people can go look at. But yeah, generally a chronic UTI is not something that we take very really consider as a cause in geriatrics, right?
Right. I don't think that that's a medical condition. A chronic UTI is not a medical condition. You can have recurrent UTIs. That's a condition. Again, oftentimes confused.
And you can have a colonized bladder, also known as asymptomatic bacteriuria.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, you can then have cultures which are positive and people can be confused for totally different reasons. So
exactly.
Right. To make things a little murky,
okay.
But I would not say that there is such a thing as a 3 month UTI.
Yeah, a 3 month clinically significant UTI. Right,
right.
I agree. Okay, and so I found that families are often very concerned about recurrent UTIs in people who have Alzheimer's or another type of dementia, and sometimes really want their loved one to be on prophylactic antibiotics. And I was just wondering if you could speak a little bit to what we know about this based on kind of medical research and what your own practice is around this.
I mean, there are people that get very serious urinary tract infections. And typically those are people who have stones that you can't go after for some reason, or maybe they have some kind of bladder dysfunction that's causing them to have it. But there are people who get like bacteria floating in their blood on multiple occasions. And so you know that they really have this predisposition to getting not just a little bladder infection, but a really serious bladder infection. And those people, we do know that putting them on a low-dose antibiotic can reduce the frequency of urinary tract infections. You cut the risk about in half. So people, you know, might go from having 6 to 3 in a year, which might be sufficient, might be worth it.
How do they not develop resistance to that antibiotic?
They do.
Okay. Yeah, they keep having to switch the antibiotic that they're throwing them on?
So there's some, the studies, these are the trials, right? They keep them on for a year and then they look back over the year and they see. What they also did is they went and they looked at the bacteria to see if it was resistant to that antibiotic that they were on, and there were increasing rates of resistance over time. So at some point, the bacteria in your body will be resistant to whatever you're put on. Is that going to happen within the first 3 months, the first 6 months, the first year? It's hard to say, but it will definitely happen at some point. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think things like methenamine, which might be, you know, a sort of a novel way of going at the bladder and keeping the bladder environment hostile to bacteria, is a better choice if you can do it.
Yeah.
So
maybe let's, we covered this in part one, but just briefly touching on, you know, some things that can help prevent recurrent UTIs or reduce the risk of UTIs. So one is, go ahead, tell us again,
Yeah, methenamine, which is a, it's a, turns your urine into an acidic environment, which is hostile to bacteria. For women, vaginal estrogens can also help sort of plump up that environment, potentially reduce the rates of UTIs. The evidence behind cranberries is less strong, so I don't necessarily recommend that. But I think the other things like aggressive hydration, time toileting, using Vaseline or other type of barrier cream down there can actually reduce the rates of UTI and maintaining a good functional bowel system so that you're
avoiding having constipation.
Like the plague, so that you're moving your bowels and that you're having good hygiene, that you're wiping in the right way. I think a bidet for older people can be wonderful, you know, some way to help really keep clean down there if they have arthritis and it's hard for them to do it, whatever works.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, let's now shift gears and talk about people who live in nursing homes. I know this is an area of particular, you know, interest and expertise for you. So yeah, tell us a bit about UTIs in the what we sometimes refer to as the long-term care population.
Right. So I think the issue is that this is probably the highest rates of asymptomatic bacteriuria. So they have both physical frailty and cognitive impairment. It tends to be both a population with dementia as plus, a dementia plus population. And therefore, we see very high rates of asymptomatic bacteriuria in this population. Again, we also see high rates of chronic conditions. So you have heart failure and they're on diuretics. You have diabetes, hopefully well controlled, but they can you can get diuresis from your diabetes. So there are a lot of conditions which are going to make managing the bladder a challenge. Additionally, even though there is care in nursing homes, many nursing homes are understaffed these days. I think in the post-COVID world, you know, really trying to make sure that they can do time toileting, really making sure that they're getting cleaned after their toileting. I think those can be really significant challenges in a lot of nursing homes, not because the nurses don't care. It's just they are literally, there's too much work for them to do. And so this tends to be a population in which I sometimes worry that the, oh, she's more confused, let's just give her an antibiotic pathway becomes an even stronger push because of all of those other barriers to sort of reducing the risk of UTIs are not there.
Yeah. So it sounds like people who live in nursing homes tend to be at First of all, many of them are going to be colonized.
Yeah.
Period. So if you culture their urine, it will be positive whether or not they are having a clinical UTI.
Correct.
Second, can easily get urinary tract infections. They may not be getting the care that's needed for their hygiene. They have weaker immune systems. Third, very likely to have symptoms that could be a UTI. Just because of the medications they're on, there are other, chronic conditions that can give people extra urination, you know, or discomfort down there. So all of this means that it's a really tricky group in which to potentially evaluate for UTI. So since this has been like such a common conundrum, I think you... The Association for Medical Directors, right, has actually worked on this to come up with guidelines for how UTIs should be diagnosed and treated when people are in nursing homes. Can you take us through those? Like, what are the latest recommendations?
Yeah, there's some actually, the challenge is that when it comes to diagnosing a UTI, even in this population, it really is a matter of symptoms and signs and symptoms and the presence of bacteria in their urine. Okay. That is, it's a medical diagnosis that doesn't have, it's not like a gold standard where I can check your temperature and yes, this is a fever, right? Though in older adults, we just talked about how that's a bit of a challenge. It still requires a patient telling you or you seeing something going on with that person in front of you to lead to your diagnosis of a UTI. I will say the Infectious Disease Society of America is redoing their guidelines right now, and I am a part of that for long-term care, but that there have been two Delphi panels that were done by AMDA, which is now called PA PALT-MED. PALT-MED is the new name for AMDA. It's the American Medical. It stands for the something Association for Long-Term Care.
Okay.
I'm going to have to look it up.
It's the Professional Association for People in Long-Term Care.
Yes. So it's all the medical directors and nursing, you know, directors of nursing and all the people in long-term care. And they have two guidelines, which I think is fascinating. And pretty much they say very similar things. And again, what they say is symptoms and the presence of bacteria is what you need to make your diagnosis. And cloudy, stinky, smelly urine, and non-specific signs or symptoms should not be called a UTI unless you have no other explanation for them.
Right. So in other words, a little increased confusion or fatigue or weakness does not count as a symptom.
Correct. And that's true, again, that's sort of true across the board. I think it becomes harder to resist that, sort of the more frail and less a person is able to speak for themselves. It still appears to be the case that to have an infection in your bladder, you need signs and symptoms of an infection in your bladder.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because if the person has a positive urine culture but otherwise has nothing specific, then is it recommended to sort of follow that approach you were saying, which is give them a few days of, you know, observation?
Right. I mean, in theory, we should be doing that from the moment we're worried about them, right? We want to make sure they're not septic for other reasons. We want to make sure that they're not having like atrial fibrillation with a rapid ventricular rate, and that causes their blood pressure to drop, and that's why they're confused, right? Like we want to get to the source of what's going on with that person. So we'd want aggressive monitoring in terms of their vitals. We want to really be making sure we're keeping a close eye on them, and that we're going to then work that up while the culture's brewing. The culture comes back, we can take a look at our person again and say, hey, is she different? Is she better? Is she back to her baseline? And if the answer is yes, again, we're going to say, okay, regardless of what that culture said, that culture may have grown, you know, who knows, heck, but she's back to her baseline. All right, let's just call that asymptomatic bacteria and we'll go on with our lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then can you speak really quickly, especially in long-term care, there are people who have chronic catheters in their bladder. How do we think about UTIs in those groups?
Well, we want to get the catheter out if we can at all possibly get the catheter out. Let's just say that. I think we used to use catheters much more aggressively than we do now. I think people have gotten a lot better about saying, you know, they're going to be incontinent. We're going to let them be incontinent. We're not going to put a Foley in them just for that reason. Though we know a Foley will increase your risk of having a UTI. So we do have to be very careful about it. Every time you get, again, if that Foley's been in place for more than 30 days, it's going to have bacteria when you culture it. Even if it is a fresh sample, there will have been bacteria in there. So I think it's important for us to recognize that when we are going to do a culture for a person who has an indwelling catheter, it's really to not help us decide, do we treat or not treat? It's really going to tell us what we're treating. Are we giving the right antibiotic to treat that bacteria?
Okay. All right. Well, so any questions that you think are good for older adults and families to consider when it comes to the possibility of UTIs for somebody who lives in a facility?
I think it's important for families to keep an open mind. I think it's important to push hydration. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen constipation in our older population in nursing homes that develops to a point in which you can actually get serious infections from poop in your colon. And I have seen it more times recently than I have ever seen it before. And that can push on your bladder, be causing problems with the bladder, and that really focusing outside the bladder can prevent UTIs in these people and can really help explain what's going on with them. So not to just rush to judgment, to really try to keep that, you know, open mind when it comes to this, because antibiotics can harm their loved one. And I know that that's why they're asking for antibiotics. It's because they love them. They want to make sure they're getting good care. But good care for many older people does not include an antibiotic for this asymptomatic bacteria.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, Dr. Crissy, thank you so very much. Maybe we can like recap our key points. I'll try to recap your key points as I heard them. When it comes to urinary tract infections in these more vulnerable groups of older adults, meaning either the ones who have a memory or thinking problem, such as Alzheimer's or related dementia, and or those who are living in nursing homes or facilities. And so some key takeaways is that, first of all, lots of older adults have bladders that are colonized with bacteria. It's a really common situation. It means anytime you culture their urine, it will be positive. And that does not mean they have a clinically significant urinary tract infection. And so a UTI should never be diagnosed solely on the basis of a positive urine culture. In both those groups, whether it's people who live at home with memory problems or people who are in the facility, to be diagnosed with a clinical UTI, you need to have symptoms that relate somehow to the bladder. And the challenge, especially in people who have memory problems and are not under super close supervision, is that they might not remember the symptoms they have. So it might require some observation to find out whether they really are grimacing when they pee or having to pee a lot more than usual. It sounds like the treatment is, if there's more bacteria than usual in the bladder and symptoms, the treatment would be antibiotics, but that otherwise, treating just a colonized bladder with antibiotics has not been shown to improve outcomes is not a good idea. We also talked about the fact that just being more confused or tired than usual by itself does not count as an important symptom. Can either wait it out or be looking for one of the many other things that can cause some confusion or fatigue in older adults. I think you also said that just smelly urine is not a sign of a UTI.
Nope.
What else did I miss? What else do we want to recap?
I think those are all really good.
But it's a challenge. And it's a challenge sussing out true UTIs in these.
It is. And so we're going to get it wrong sometimes on both sides. We're going to get it wrong as much as we try. There's no like slam dunk yes, and there's rarely a slam dunk no. So just to be mindful that hopefully your doctors are being thoughtful about these diagnoses and to ask questions and make sure you understand. I think that's really the takeaway point.
And let's also recap what you were saying about some non-antibiotic methods that help maintain good urinary hygiene and reduce the risk of UTIs.
Yes, we have aggressive hydration, we have time toileting, we have making sure you're not constipated, we have vaginal estrogens, we have methenamine, you know, maybe cranberry, maybe not. And those can be wonderful. And that way you never even have to have a diagnosis. You're just going to keep your bladder nice and healthy.
Nice and healthy. Okay, sounds good. Well, great. Well, Dr. Crissy, thank you so much for being here. And thank you for all this work that you have done over these past several years, just studying how we care for our frailest elders, especially in nursing homes, and trying to figure out how we can get them more of the care that really helps them and less of things that might not be helpful, like antibiotics when they're not truly needed. So I have just really enjoyed seeing the work that you've been doing these past several years. And thank you for doing that. And thank you for coming to share your wisdom with us today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for reaching out to everyone. We know that this is, you know, I tell people that you have to be tough to get old and it's not easy. So thank you so much for all that you do and for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Great. And with that, thank you very much for watching. I'm going to wrap up this episode. And so if you found this episode helpful, if you're here on YouTube, please go ahead and subscribe. It does help more people find the channel. And if you're somebody who is trying to figure out how to help an aging parent, I have a special interest in supporting people like you. So I've created a variety of Helping Older Parents resources and trainings. And I also have a book called When Your Aging Parent Needs Help. So if you would like to get more useful information on how to care for aging parents, including my free online trainings, please visit betterhealthwhileaging.net/helping-older-parents. Last but not least, if you've been listening to the audio version of the podcast, come and take a look at the video if you get a chance. You'll be able to see some of the key points displayed on the screen. So thank you once again, and I look forward to seeing you on a future episode of the Better Health While Aging video podcast.